Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Would you please turn to your Bibles to the second chapter of the book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah, the second chapter. 2 weeks ago, we talked about Nehemiah's prayer and some of the elements that we found in Nehemiah, the first chapter, that show elements of appropriate prayer, very similar to what we saw in the sixth chapter of the book of Matthew when we see Jesus giving us the model prayer. Not a prayer necessarily to be repeated and said by rote, but one that includes elements that lets us understand exactly how God would have us to appeal to Him. In the second chapter, we see that while Nehemiah had heard about the fact that the people who had returned from the Persian Empire, where he serves under Artaxerxes as his cupbearer, he hears that they are not doing well because the walls of the city of Jerusalem have been torn down, because the gates have been burned. You see the people of Jerusalem living in a huddled condition, in one in which they are always vulnerable to the enemies round about, who raid and in their raids on Jerusalem keep it impoverished. He's terribly upset by these things. And it shows in his work. At the first part of chapter 2, I want you to notice, it came about in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, that wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had not been sad in his presence. So the king said to me, "Why is your face sad, though you're not sick? This is nothing but sadness of heart." Then I was very much afraid. You weren't supposed to be sad in the king's presence. You were always supposed to be upbeat and to show that in every aspect of your life. And I said to the king, "Let the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies desolate and its gates have been consumed by fire?" Then the king said to me, "What would you request?" So I prayed to the God of heaven. And I said to the king, "If it please the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it." Then the king said to me, the queen sitting beside him, "How long will your journey be, and when will you return?" So it pleased the king to send me, and I gave him a definite time. So here we see the circumstances that bring about Nehemiah being appointed to be the governor of Judea. It's the year 445 BC, and his governorship is apparently not going to involve a great length of time. The events described in the book of Nehemiah are events that take place over a relatively short period of time, maybe only a year or a year and a half. But we do find some very important things, I think, in this story of Nehemiah's governorship. One of the things that I think we can discover just passing is the fact that when we find him appearing before the king and his appearance is sad and the king challenges him about it, he gives the king an honest answer to let him understand exactly why he's sad, because the city of Jerusalem has been destroyed and his people who are living there are living in a terribly perilous condition. It's also interesting to me to notice that in verse 4 it says, when the king asks, "What do you request?" he says, "So I prayed to the God of heaven and I said to the king," and he goes on to talk about what he said to the king. Now, I doubt if we find a situation here where Nehemiah hit his knees there in the king's presence and said a prayer before the Lord that lasted 20 or 30 minutes. I believe we find a situation here that gives us full authority for silent prayer and full authority for those swift prayers that we offer under very difficult circumstances. How many times during your workday do you wind up appealing to the Lord just on the basis of a single item, asking the Lord to be able to help you with it, asking the Lord to give you encouragement, asking Him to give you faith, asking Him to give you wisdom as you deal with a particular issue? Here we see in a single conversation that he has with the king, we find him praying to the Lord, and then the answer is given, so that he asked to find favor to be able to help go and rebuild the walls of the city. And the king responds very, very quickly, what are you going to need and how long are you going to be gone? So the task is one that, as far as God's help, is one that is not impugned at all by the fact that this is a short prayer, that this is a arrow prayer, as some have described it, targeted straight to God to be able to ask for the Lord's wisdom under difficult circumstances. So Nehemiah is sent to the city of Jerusalem to serve as its governor. And there we see in the last part of chapter 2, he goes out after being there for 3 days in the night and scouts the walls out to see the breaches that exist in it, to find difficulties that will be involved in the rebuilding of this wall, because he has a very limited commission, but one that is an important one, to make the city strong, to make the city viable, to make it to where it can be protected against its enemies. And we see him coming back with a plan for rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. In chapter 3, we find one of those chapters that's known primarily for the fact that it includes an awful lot of hard names. In verse 3 of chapter 3, it talks about some things that I think there may be more, in spite of the fact that these names are indeed hard to pronounce, there may be more going on than you might expect. Now the sons of Hasenaah built the fish gate, and they laid its beams and hung its doors with its bolts and bars. And next to them, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, the son of Hakkoz, made repairs. And next to him, Meshullam, the son of Berechiah, the son of Meshezabel, made repairs. And next to him, Zadok, the son of Baanah, also made repairs. Moreover, next to him, the Tekoites made repairs, but their nobles did not support the work of their master. Here, as we read about this, and sometimes I think it's easy to skip over passages like this in the Word of God, because after all, you didn't know anything about Meshezabel. We don't know anything about Hakkoz. We don't know anything about these people, and very often it's easy for us to think that these are just hard names to say with no particular lessons to teach us. But I think in chapter 3 especially, there are some lessons that help us understand better how that we can find ways to be able to accomplish the work that God has given us to do. I think we ought to do like Nehemiah did when given the opportunity. When the opportunity was placed in his lap, he winds up praying to the God of heaven, and the Lord gives him an opportunity to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. The Lord has given us opportunities here in Bowling Green, Kentucky, to be able to spread the borders of his kingdom in this area. And there are plans that are at work, that are working, to be able to teach the gospel to people who come and visit in our assemblies. And for those that are friends and neighbors of those of you out there who may be able to have those friends who are not in the Lord's church. We need to also recognize that there is work that needs to be accomplished in this congregation just to be able to make sure that things function as they're supposed to operate, to make sure that we accomplish our work of edification. It's important that we have appropriately trained teachers at all levels to be able to teach people all the way from the babies class to those who can teach the adult classes. We need men and women who at the appropriate level will be able to teach other women, perhaps. Women may be able to teach children, and we need men who will be able to teach those children that are older and to be able to teach the adult classes in which we have opportunity. You see, there's work to be done at every particular level you want to imagine. There are tasks that are involved just in getting the building open and getting the building clean, making sure that everything operates like it needs to, so that behind the scenes, in spite of the fact that you don't know it, somebody has prepared the Lord's Supper so that it could be taken this morning and so that it could be taken tonight by those who weren't able to be here this morning. There are works that need to be done. And I think just in looking at the examples of these unknown heroes that we read about in the third chapter of the book of Nehemiah, we might be able to find some clues about how to and how not to do the work that God intended for us to do. You notice a great deal of work being done in terms of building of this wall. And I expect it took a lot of hard work, hard labor, to be able to move stones in such a way so that they could be mortared together to be able to form the wall that exists in Hezekiah's day. I've been to Jerusalem and I've seen sections of this wall that were built. And you can tell they were built hastily, but you can tell they were also built solidly. So that here, centuries later, you can look and see sections of Hezekiah's, of the wall in Nehemiah's time that was built. But I think there were also some difficulties that they faced. You'll notice here it says in verse 5 that the Tekoites made repairs, but their nobles did not support the work of their masters. You know, there's a lot of work that we need to do here too. Are there any of us in the audience that are too good to do the work that needs to be done? I don't expect to see a show of hands because generally people who have such an attitude aren't quite as candid as we would hope they would be. But there are people who somehow feel too noble to do some work that God has given us to do. You remember it talks about in the third epistle that John wrote about a man whose name was Diotrephes, who loved to have the preeminence among them. He causes an awful lot of trouble. In fact, it tells them that he discourages people from doing what they ought to do and even puts certain ones out of the church. But yet, while you may not be as bad as Diotrephes, are you one of those people who need to be first in everything that you do? Who don't want to participate in any kind of task that you do not run? There are some people who are like that. I'm afraid there are some people like that even in this congregation, who in spite of the fact that there is work planned out for us to do in terms of our teaching program, work planned out in terms of our personal work program, work planned out in terms of benevolence, work planned out in terms of evangelism, and our ability to continue to function in our worship before God, unless they can be the ones who run it, unless they can call the shots, unless they have to submit to no one in the task that they perform, they're just too noble to do the work that they've been given to do. You see, that's not a new problem. That was a problem that existed in Nehemiah's day, where we have people who, as it says, the nobles didn't support the work of their masters. Were these people going to benefit from the fact that Jerusalem had walls? Certainly they were. But you know, somehow they were too good to get their hands dirty in the work that needed to be done. Let me tell you, Christians, we ought to not be too good to do anything that is necessary for us to do in order to make sure that God's people are able to worship, that we're able to engage in evangelism and benevolence and edification at this particular location, and to be a bright, shining light in this community. If you think you're too good for that particular work or any particular work that is being done, you are sadly mistaken, and you need to have an attitude adjustment so that you can get yourself where you need to be and not think of yourself more highly than you ought to think. We see other names that are mentioned, and we're not going to go through the whole list. I'm not going to try to read through those because it presents to me a difficulty in which I might mess up in front of you. Or if I were to say them right, you might say, Pope's just showing off, so I'm not going to do that. But you know what I'm going to do is mention just a few situations like the one that we mentioned to show again difficulties that may happen not only in the work of rebuilding the wall, but the work that needs to be done even here. It tells us in verse 12, as it describes different sections of the wall that were being built by people. In verse 12, it says, next to him, Shallum, the son of Halohesh, the official of half the district of Jerusalem, made repairs, he and his daughters. Does that sound a little strange to you in this whole story? In which we see something that is a man's task primarily, we see a man who is accomplishing work with his daughters. Throughout history, there have been tasks that God has intended for men to do, and sometimes we have men who completely abrogate their responsibilities to do what God would have them to do, and women sometimes step up to be able to fill in the gaps. Sometimes there are situations in which men certainly need to take over the spiritual leadership of their families, and we find instead of them being the spiritual leaders that they need to be, they have to be drug along by their wives to be able to even come to church like they ought to, much less teach their children as they should be given the responsibility to do. Do you remember in Ephesians, the 6th chapter, there the Apostle Paul is talking about different responsibilities that are given to people who would serve the Lord, the responsibility of husbands to their wives, as we talked about this morning in chapter 5. It talks about slaves and their relationship to their masters. But it also talks about, in the 6th chapter, the responsibility that fathers have. He says in verse 4 of chapter 6, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." Children have the responsibility to obey, but fathers have the responsibility to make sure that rather than provoking their children to anger through unreasonable discipline or through inconsistent discipline, to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. Gentlemen, do you take that responsibility seriously, or do you just throw up your hands and say, maybe my wife can take care of that? If you have a wife who is a godly woman, who helps teach your children, who helps make sure that they are dressed and ready for services on Sunday and Wednesday, who tells them Bible stories at night, who reads to them from the Word of God, you're a very blessed man. And I'm not trying to say that women have no responsibility in terms of the raising of their children and the spiritual qualities that are instilled in them. But let me tell you, from what we see in the 6th chapter of the book of Ephesians in verse 4, it says fathers are to bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. It is your responsibility. Are you just turning over the building of the wall to some other man's daughters? Sometimes in congregations, you'll have men that are so inept and so disinterested in the work that a majority of the work that gets done, almost all behind the scenes, is done by faithful sisters in the Lord's church. I'm so glad that's done. I really hate the need for it to have to be done when men don't step up and do the responsibilities that they are given to do. If the elders have given you tasks as a deacon to perform, are you performing them to the best of your ability? If the elders approach you about doing something, whether you're a deacon or not, do you take that responsibility seriously? Do you take your teaching responsibilities of both your children and the children of others in this congregation seriously? See, if you don't do some of those things, there are tasks that women may be able to perform as they stand in the gap that's left by your absence. But you know, we need to make sure that we don't ever force sisters into a situation that is beyond what they need to be responsible to do because we aren't doing our tasks. That's what happened on the wall of Jerusalem. And we need to make sure that we keep up our responsibilities and do what we should do as God has outlined in His Word. We see also in verse 28 of the 3rd chapter of the book of Nehemiah some other work that was done. It said, "Now above the horse gate the priests carried out repairs, each in front of his house. And after them Zadok the son of Immer carried out repairs in front of his house. And after him Shemaiah the son of Shechaniah the keeper of the east gate carried out repairs. And after him, Hananiah, the son of Shelemiah, and Hanun, the 6th son of Zelaph, repaired another section. And after him, Meshullam, the son of Berechiah, carried out repairs in front of his own quarters." Now, there is an exception in this particular reading, but I want you to notice that most people involved in this particular task took care of the work in front of their house. Now, I recognize there is a logic about someone taking care of work in front of their house. In fact, it may have been orders that came down all the way from Nehemiah to work on the area that is in front of your house. I'm not saying it was wrong for people to do that. But it is interesting to notice there were certain people who went beyond the responsibility of just building in front of their house. And as we see, Hananiah the son of Shelemiah and Hanun the sixth son of Zalaph, they repaired another section. Back up a little bit, and you'll notice as it describes in verse 21, after him, Meremoth the son of Uriah the son of Hakoz repaired another section from the doorway of Eliashib's house even as far as the end of his house. Do you see two mindsets among the people? One is, I'm going to take care of what's in front of my house, and the rest of it can just go undone. But at least I've done my job. You ever had somebody suggest to you that you do something in particular that is involved in the work of this congregation, and you say, not my job. That's so-and-so's job. Or that's not my job. That's the preacher's job. Or that's the elder's job. Or that's the deacon's job. Or I'll tell you, that's somebody else's job. That's not my job, because I've taken care of my job right in front of my house. Ever felt that way? I expect that's the way a lot of these people thought right here too. I'll do what's in front of my house, and that'll be it. And there is, as it describes in the sixth chapter of the book of Galatians, a responsibility that we have to take care of what exists in front of our house. We're told in that particular passage, the fifth verse of chapter 6 in the book of Galatians, for each one should bear his own load. I'm certainly not trying to encourage you to do less than your load. But do you know there were those that we have described also who did more than their load? Who built beyond their house to someone else's house and all the way down, as it describes in verse 21, how that Meremoth, the son of Uriah, the son of Hakoz, repaired another section from the doorway of Eliashib's house, even as far as the end of his house. He did somebody else's work. Sometimes, in spite of our best efforts, there are people who may not be able to accomplish the work they would like to do. Sometimes age or infirmity or spiritual weakness may stand in the way of somebody being able to accomplish the work that they would like to do. But you know, what we need to do is to recognize that our responsibility is to stand in the gap and accomplish that work so that others might be able to be benefited too. Let me read earlier a few passages in the sixth chapter of the book of Galatians. It says, beginning in verse 1, brethren, even if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, so that you too will not be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks that he's something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. But each one must examine his own work, and then he will have reason for boasting in regard to himself alone, and not in regard to another. For each one will bear his own load. What's our task? Our task is to bear our own load. But once we've borne our own load, what should we be interested in doing? We need to help somebody else bear their load. Now, some people say, well, that seems contradictory to me. If everybody's bearing their load, how is there any load for anybody else to bear? Well, that's right. But you know, sometimes there are people who, for one reason or another, are not able to bear the load they have been given, and the only way that we can accomplish the work that God wants us to do here at West End is to make sure that we try to look around after we have accomplished our work and help others accomplish theirs. We need to look and see what needs to be done. If you have trouble finding something to do as an active member of the congregation here, talk to one of our elders and they'll give you something to do. They may have to think about it for a minute, but there'll be things that need to be done. In fact, some of them may not even need to think about it a minute. They may be able to give you a list right away. You have the responsibility to bear your own load, but you know, we need to bear one another's burdens too. And that requires knowing each other well enough to be able to understand when somebody is faltering, either because of infirmity or of age or of spiritual weakness. You see, that's what we see being done on this wall. People being able to accomplish the work, and to be able to accomplish the work because people did what they were supposed to do, and people did even beyond what they were supposed to do, as they bore not only their own burdens, but as some went even beyond and bore the burdens of others. We see in the fourth chapter of the book of Nehemiah, there were other things that were hindrances to the work that they were given to do. It says in verse 4, "Now it came about that when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became furious and very angry and mocked the Jews." These are some of the enemies who have been making the life of the people in Jerusalem miserable for years, as Jerusalem has stood there as a ruin with people huddled in the middle of it, with walls torn down and gates burned. "He broke in the presence of his brothers. He spoke in the presence of his brothers and the wealthy men of Samaria and said, 'What are these feeble Jews doing? Are they going to restore it for themselves? Can they offer sacrifices? Can they finish in a day? Can they revive the stones from the dusty rubble, even the burned ones?' Now Tobiah the Ammonite was near him and said, 'Even what they're building, if a fox should jump on it, he would break their stone wall down.'" Have you ever been involved in a work of any kind, and you grew discouraged in the work because everybody was a commentator? People sat around and weren't necessarily interested in doing the work themselves, and these people here were certainly outside the pale of God's people. They were enemies of the Lord's people. But you notice the things that they say are things that were intended to discourage the work that God's people were accomplishing. I'm afraid most of the time our biggest discouragement as Christians doesn't come from those outside, but comes from those inside who would talk about the wall that we're building and say, "Well, that won't work. We tried that back at Bug Tussle where I was and didn't work. We tried that for a couple of weeks one time where I used to go to church. Didn't work. I don't think that'll work, because I saw Brother So-and-so try to do something one time and it didn't work. And, you know, if Brother So-and-so can't accomplish it, neither can we." That's interesting. People like that aren't necessarily interested in doing the work themselves. They're just interested in being commentators to be able to comment on what other people can't do. Instead of talking about what we can accomplish, they're trying to talk about what can't be accomplished, and in doing so, discourage the work that is being done. Do you remember in the long list that the Apostle Paul has in 2 Corinthians of the difficulties that he had faced as a preacher of the gospel of Jesus Christ? He talks about times in which he had been beaten, the time in which he was stoned so badly that they went off and left him because they thought he was dead. Here we see him describing in verse 26 some of those difficulties as he goes beyond the physical. And he says, "I've been in frequent journeys, in dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, dangers from my countrymen, dangers from the Gentiles, dangers in the city, dangers in the wilderness, dangers on the sea, dangers among false brethren." The Apostle Paul had been discouraged by fellow Jews. He'd been discouraged by Gentiles. He'd been discouraged by the tasks that he was to perform that sometimes seemed to have obstacles in their way. But isn't it interesting that he ties in with the very fact that he had been beaten with rods, that he had received the 39 lashes from the Jews on several occasions, that he had been stoned so badly that they went off and left him because they thought he was dead at Lystra. We see him including in that list of discouragements and frustrations and trials, dangers among false brethren. Let me tell you, if all you can do is sit around and be a commentator, it would be best for you to maybe go to church someplace else. Don't discourage the work here. Try to be someone who is positive and encourages the work. Now, that doesn't mean that the things that we are trying to accomplish can't be improved. But try to improve them rather than being someone who doesn't ever have any positive accomplishment that you can put forward as something that could be done. Never a positive word about what could be done, but always have negative things to say about what people are doing without involving any kind of encouragement in the work. You don't help when you do that. You become one of those discouragements that wind up being something that keep people from doing the work that they need to accomplish. We're not perfect. Elders aren't perfect. I know, and you know, you don't have a perfect preacher. But you have to recognize that there are ways in which improvement can be accomplished by talking to people about improvement in such a way so that you recognize that that's the goal that we're all trying to achieve, not somebody who only has things to say that say, well, if a fox jumped on that wall, he'd knock it down. Or, I can't imagine that personal work plan working. Boy, I can't imagine this curriculum working and teaching our students. Boy, I can't imagine that line of preaching is going to help anyone. Oh, I don't imagine that we're going to be able to accomplish anything given the set of deacons we've got. Do you see what I'm saying? If all you have to contribute is something that discourages the work of those who are busy working, it'd be better for you to never say anything again than to do that. It takes no effort at all to discourage. It takes quite a challenge on our part to be able to provide encouraging words. Words that may be constructive as we tell people how they can do things better. But no effort at all to be able to say things that will discourage the work that God's people are out trying to do. And he did discourage them. In the sixth chapter of the book of Nehemiah, in verse 9, here as he's praying to the Lord, there we see Nehemiah saying, for all of them were trying to frighten us, thinking they will become discouraged with the work and it will not be done. But now, O God, strengthen my hands. There are people who have become discouraged by the work that other people are doing. But you know, it didn't stop the work. In fact, back in the fourth chapter, as we see Nehemiah talking about this work in verse 6 of chapter 4, he says, so we built the wall, and the whole wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. Think about it. There was discouragement on the part of the fact that the nobles were too good to do some things that needed to be done. And there were some men that just didn't fulfill their responsibilities to the extent that women had to do part of their work of building the wall. There were other people who were so self-interested that all they wanted to do was the work right in front of their house. And there were other people who were so involved in the work that they were willing to do things even in another section to be able to complete the work. There were people who stood back and tried to discourage the work that was being done. But in spite of all of that, I want you to understand that he talks about the wall being built to half its height because the people had a mind to work. That's the challenge we need to ask ourselves. Or do we have a mind to work? There's work that needs to be accomplished here at West End. As Christians, we need to be involved in the work of worshiping the Lord and taking care of those responsibilities that we have. To partake of the Lord's Supper every first day of the week. To pray, to sing, to give of our means. To make sure that in our prayers and in our efforts that we make everything so that we might be able to be pleasing to the Lord. So that our giving is something that is done sacrificially. So that as we take care of that, we might be able to accomplish even further work for the Lord. It takes work to be able to make a congregation operate so that everyone in the flock is able to be benefited by the work that is being done by the elders in guiding that flock. There's edification that needs to take place. There's an encouraging word that needs to be given from time to time. And do you know, if you practice that, you can get to where you're pretty good at it. Of saying something nice about what some of these young men do when they stand up here to read the Word of God and when they come to say a prayer. We have amazing young people here who are able to do great things. And yet sometimes it's easy for us to concentrate on the negative rather than concentrate on the fact that someone is standing up here helping us in our worship to God. I know women who have told me, I'm sure glad I don't have the responsibility to do any public work before God's people because I'd be so nervous I could barely accomplish it. You know, it is a great challenge, a great privilege to be able to involve yourself in that. But let me tell you, when you stand up in front of people to preach the gospel, to make announcements, to sing, to pray, to read the scriptures, there's a whole bunch of things that can happen and only one of them's good. Your pants could fall down in the middle of the lesson. I've seen it happen with a fellow who was waiting on the Lord's table one time. I've been standing behind the pulpit when all of a sudden I felt a breeze and I made a pass by the front of my pants and noticed that my pants were gapped open. That's one thing that this particular pulpit would not help at all. I was not involved in its selection. It is very, very difficult to concentrate on what you are preaching when you are thinking about how am I going to get out from around this particular pulpit when all is over. In fact, I was thinking about several things. You can actually preach and think at the same time. I was thinking perhaps I'll just, in denominational fashion, dismiss the audience. Maybe I can dismiss things with a prayer, and while the prayer is going on, I could do that. And that's what I decided to do. I decided, brethren, let's just pray. And I led the congregation in a lengthy prayer while I worked with one of those nylon zippers, trying to get it to go all the way to the bottom and come back up. And finally, it took hold. All kinds of things can happen. Only one of them's good. It doesn't take anything to pat somebody on the back and tell them how much you appreciate the good work that they are doing and the work that they accomplish. These ladies that teach these young people in the classes, do you realize they are probably doing a task that is much more important than what I do? Because they're dealing with wet cement. These kids are like dry sponges. They're going to take what you teach them and they're going to remember it the rest of their lives. And when I preach to people, they don't remember what I preached the Wednesday after I preach it on Sunday. You see? So important for the work that they do. And they are, it is such a thankless task. It doesn't take anything to pat somebody on the back and edify them, build them up, let them understand that you appreciate the good work that they are accomplishing in the Lord's service. These ladies that get kids ready to come to church so that their child will never have a memory of the time when their parents didn't get them ready and come to church so that they can worship God. Do you realize how important that is? Don't let your children grow up thinking that there is an alternative. Let them realize that we get up and and on Sunday morning and we worship God and we don't have to decide what we're going to do. It has been decided long ago. And we need to make sure that we encourage those young women who are raising small children, who come to church sometimes looking disheveled or shell-shocked. Maybe take that child and hold it for a little while to give them a break. If nothing else, pat them on the back and tell them how much you appreciate the good work that they're doing in the Lord's service. There's benevolent work that needs to be done. We need to know each other well enough to know each other's needs so that we might even be able to help one another financially if necessary, certainly spiritually. And there's evangelism that needs to take place not only among those who visit our assembly, but among those out in the community who are lost and dying in sin. You see, there's work to accomplish. Do you have a mind to work? They were able to get this wall built. It goes on and describes the conflict that they had, even as they had to build the wall, holding weapons in one hand and building with the other, having to take turns so that some guarded while others dug. But it tells us that the work was finally accomplished in chapter 6 and verse 15. So the wall was completed on the 25th of the month Elul in 52 days. They got it accomplished. You know why? Because the people had a mind to work. You know, I believe that West End has a mind to work. But it's not going to happen by accident. It's going to happen because we keep that mind to work. And we determine we're going to do our best in the Lord's service because the Lord deserves nothing but our best. And to make sure that whatever task we are called upon to do or whatever we see around about us to accomplish in the Lord's kingdom, to do it with all our might. Jerusalem's wall was built that way. In 52 days. I expect we've got more than 52 days to be able to accomplish the Lord's work. Maybe not. Hope so. But you know, if that's all we had, what kind of work would the Lord judge us for accomplishing? Would we be guilty of some of the problems that we've seen in building the wall of Jerusalem? Or would we be people who had a mind to work? And whether it was 52 days or 520 days or 52,000 days, we continue to stand fast doing the work that God gave us to do. That's my hope and prayer for us. And I think we need to dedicate ourselves and rededicate ourselves to that important task. If you're not a child of God this evening, you're not in a position where you can build the wall. You're in a position to where, like it or not, you are someone who is discouraging the work of building the wall. I know that's not what you want to do, but yet the very fact that you are a neutral or bad example in front of those round about you puts you in a situation in which you are not one of those who are building the wall, but one of those who stands around and discourages people by your inaction from doing what God would have them to do. Correct that tonight by coming in faith and showing it through repentance, confessing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and we can baptize you tonight so that you can leave this place washed in the blood of the Lamb. If you as a child of God haven't lived as you should, correct all of those bad habits that we've seen described here. Make things right while there's time and opportunity, because there's a great day coming in which there'll not be any opportunity from that point on to build, but we'll be judged on the basis of how we built the wall around this particular community, around this particular church, the way we've built the work that God would have us to do here in this church as His holy temple. Think about these things, and if we can help anyone as they make things right this evening, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.